There's a running joke in my family about something that my older brother and I understand because we did it. It's a joke or the story of the Breakfast of Champions. Now, this is how this worked. When I was growing up in Miami, my mom was very interested in helping young people to learn to swim. She had a sister who had drowned in the Miami River before she was even born, but it traumatized her family so much that she made sure that all of her children, we were swimming in diapers. We swam without diapers. We were everywhere. We love the water. We still do. Have no fear of it. And it's because of my mom. Well, she signed up at the local pool to be a swimming instructor for children who had learning disabilities. Certainly a very challenging thing to do, and she loved it, and they loved her, and it was really great. But that's not the story. The story was she had to bring Ted and me with her to the pool. Couldn't leave us at home. That's another story. But we go to the pool, and we would hang out. Now, we couldn't go in the water because they were doing lessons, so we had to just kind of wander around the outside of the pool until it was time for all of us to be able to go in and swim after the lessons were over. This is a really big pool, so you could do that. And on the other end of the pool, there was a man, or we thought it was a man at the time. I thought, you know, he seemed like a man, but he was probably in his late teens or early 20s. He was an Olympic diver. I mean, he was going to the Olympics. The guy really knew his stuff. And we would just sit there with our mouths agape watching him do the different things off of the tower. And I mean, it was amazing. The man was a champion by any standards. We just loved watching him. But also, there was nothing else to do. Well, except that because my mom was an instructor, this is kind of a long story, isn't it? Except for the fact that my mom was an instructor, my brother and I had the privilege of going into the coffee room where the all the instructors kept donuts and coffee, right? Yeah, oh, no, it's okay. Listen, it's all right. I come from German stock. We were drinking beer and chocolate and coffee when we were like 5 years old. So, I mean, my grandmother had a close eye on us. And we would walk around the pool, though, just too cool for words, right? You know, my brother and I, we'd be like, yeah, he's doing pretty good. That was a pretty good And the donuts were those white sugar donuts, you know? Yeah, aren't they great? Yeah. To this day, if I say anything to my family, to my extended family about Breakfast of Champions, everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. Sugar donut and a big old mug of Java and watch stuff going on. It was interesting, I guess. I love that. And every time I read this story about Jesus meeting up with the disciples, this post-resurrection story, I'm reminded of this. I think of the Breakfast of Champions in kind of a different way, but we'll get back to the Breakfast of Champions in a minute. Now, right now, there's a lot of news about water, where there is water, where there isn't water. There's drought coming about, even in the state of Florida. There's too much water in the Mississippi Valley. Wherever you go, it seems like water is a problem. I watched as people along the Mississippi River just some time back, they were surveying their flooded homes, and the water was up to, some of them was up to the eaves, meaning everything in the house was submerged. And some of them had that hard question, you know, where is God in all of this? Where is God? You know what it's like, don't you, when we become alarmed and anxious about our lives, things don't go the way that we think that they should, our parades are rained upon by hard and confusing times, the days seem very dark, very gray, the lakes of our lives become flooded with sadness and loss and sickness and trouble, and we ask that question, where is God in all of this? A long time ago, a small band of people looked out over another lake and asked much the same question. The followers of Jesus had suffered the crushing disappointment and anguish and despair on Good Friday. They were brokenhearted people, grief-stricken people, wondering what in the world they're supposed to do now, knowing that they had nothing to go back to. We don't know whose idea it was, but somebody had the good idea. Somebody made the suggestion, as men often do. Somebody said, let's go fishing. And they get their stuff all together and they head out for the boat, and there's no joy, no thrill of excitement. They're just numb with their experience. I wonder if you yourself are among those disciples. So many of us face broken and troubling times, and we want to ask, where is Jesus in all of this? John provides an absolutely amazing answer to the question, Jesus is cooking breakfast on the beach. Take a close look at the story. You'll see that he's frying some fish and baking some bread. There's Jesus at a critical moment in their lives. Where is he? When everything is falling down around them in their darkness moments and broken hearts, where is Jesus? Well, he's right there, standing smack dab in the shoreline of their troubled lives, and he's making breakfast. Now, I'm not sure the last time I felt alone and afraid when things were not going the way that I hoped or expected or prayed for. I'm not sure I saw Jesus on a Sunday along the shore of my lake. Did you? Have you seen that? Did anyone here take a peek through the foggy mist of their problems and spy him nearby working on a cast iron skillet frying up some fish? Did you peer through the darkness of your illness or your difficulties at home? Did you spot Jesus whistling away dipping catfish into batter? Did anyone here put their ear to the confusion of the moments of and hear the sizzling sound of fish in the distance? Did anyone here stick their nose in the air in the face of intense and immense pain of a broken relationship or tragic loss and catch the scent of breakfast cooking? Probably not. Most likely, it never even occurred to us that the risen Lord would be anywhere near the shoreline of our life. We probably didn't even bother to look, sort of like the disciples who didn't even recognize him on that morning so long ago. So my question for you is, where is Jesus at this moment? It's a powerful and provocative question to ask yourself, and you should ask it every single day as you go about the business of living your life as a Christian. And this wonderful story in the 21st chapter of John offers us some fascinating possibilities in response to that question, where is Jesus at this moment? Because first of all, John shows us that Jesus is not in yesterday's experience, but in today's reality. Oh, it's so easy to become entangled in the web of yesterday. That's where the disciples were as they sat in the boat and that day, thinking back over their time with Jesus. I remember when I was in seminary, there was a small study group, a little spiritual formation group that we had to be a part of. It was part of our exploration of our journey with God. And as we came around the circle, the instructor said, I want you to tell us, the whole group, how you experienced Jesus today and what do you expect to experience tomorrow? Well, everybody, they started to talk, but it was clear that as they shared the deepest things and how they were moved by different things, some had been moved, I remember one in particular, by a Billy Graham crusade and had gone forward to give his life to Christ. Someone else told a story about how God had answered a prayer at just the right time. Another brave soul confessed, since experiencing some tragedies at an earlier point in his life, he no longer was even sure there was a God. And so it went all the way around the circle. We all talked about the yesterdays of our faith. But then the group leader asked us, yeah, I get that. But where is Jesus at this moment? And we found ourselves fumbling for answers. So let me ask you that question. Where is Jesus at this moment in your life? According to John, Jesus is not, well, he's not up there. He's not over there. He's not up under the piano. He's not someplace in yesterday's experience, no matter how good or bad it was. But he's right here on the side of our lakes making breakfast. So there we are, frightened and bewildered people who run away from the tragedy of Jerusalem just as the disciples did. And even as those disciples think that back on their time with God on that Good Friday sadness, Jesus is standing right there in front of them. I believe that part of being a Christian is asking God for grace to become aware of his presence in the situations where we are right here and right now. In lots of personal ways, many of us wrestle with great problems. Even as we come into this church and worship here today, do you think it might be possible that Jesus is standing right here on the shorelines of our most painful situations? And if Jesus is here, then perhaps he will feed you with fish and bread and whatever other spiritual nourishment you need to persevere and to be faithful and make it through safely and victoriously. You see, many of us are so stuck in the experience of the past or so anxious for the arrival of tomorrow that we never get around to experiencing the spirituality of this very day. But Jesus is here, cooking breakfast along the shore, and you and I can find him if we will just take time to look and to listen. I remember a really wonderful story. Some of you may know, I'm a veteran ham radio operator. Yeah, one of the things, any of you ever do a ham radio? Some guys? Yeah, the few of you. Okay, yeah, I know. We'll have a nerd convention outside because, yeah, that's okay. We can wear that proudly. But one of the things you had to do is learn Morse code, right? Don't ask me because I can't remember a bit of it. But I mastered it long enough to get my license. Well, during the Depression, jobs, of course, were very scarce. And there was a telegraph office that was looking for people to work, looking for men. This one fellow came into the office, he was going to apply for the job, and as he walked in, his heart fell because there were 20 other men in the room. There was only one job, but there were 20 other men. And so he sat there, and they're all looking at each other. Some of them are talking to each other about, oh, yeah, well, you know, I really need this job, or I used to work at so-and-so. And the man sat there for a minute, and he just sat there. And he sat there. And then he got up, and he walked over to the door, and he knocked on it, and the door opened up. And he said, come on in. And everybody said, what? He's the last one in here. What is he doing? What is that? Who is this guy? Manager comes out, closes the door behind him and says, well, we filled the position. And everybody blew up. I have been here for an hour. You kept me waiting for an hour. And you didn't even give me a chance to talk to you. Why did this guy get the job? And he said, everybody calm down. Everybody listen. In the background, they could hear da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, spelling out, if you hear this message, get up, come to the door, knock, and the job is yours. Yeah. Completely missed it. Completely missed it. Because why? Because they weren't listening. They weren't expecting it to happen. There are so many other people furious and frustrated by what seems to be unfair things that happens to people. But all we're supposed to do sometimes is just simply to listen. Where is Jesus in this moment of your life? If you want to discover that, you're going to have to listen. Because I tell you, he's closer than you think. You could ask God today to help you to tune into his presence right here, right now, to open your eyes, to sharpen your ears, to become attentive to the spirituality of the moment in which you live. You see, the Lord is not in yesterday's experience, but is in today's reality. So second, John teaches that Jesus is not in yesterday's failure, but in today's forgiveness. Did you notice poor old Peter? Well, you remember how on Maundy Thursday, he swore up and down that even if everybody else denied Jesus, he would never deny the Lord. Not me, Lord. I'll fight for you. I'll die for you. I'm your man. You can count on me. Yeah, right. Just a few hours later, Jesus is arrested. Peter denies the Lord not once, but he does it three times. And then the rooster crows. And now on this early morning, some days after the resurrection, Peter is ashamed. He's ashamed that the risen Lord, to meet him face to face, is something that he's dreading. Because Jesus says to him, Peter, do you love me? Lord, you know I love you. And then Jesus says, feed my sheep. Now, see, there's an interesting thing here, a word that Jesus uses for love. Because when he says, Peter, do you love me? He's using the word agape love. Now, agape love is perfect God-like love. That it's a word we use in the church a lot, but it's agape love, that perfect, God-like love. That's what we're aiming for. But Peter replies, Lord, you know I love you, which is a Greek word meaning philios, meaning brotherly love. We get the Philadelphia comes from that word, city of brotherly love. And so Jesus says, Peter, do you agape? Do you love me as God loves you? And Peter says, Lord, you know I love you like a brother. And so Jesus asks him again, Peter, do you love me? He says, you know I love you. Feed my sheep. Over and over it goes on like this. And finally, Jesus says to him, Peter, do you agape me? Lord, you know I philios you. And just as he was denying Jesus three times, Jesus asks this question a third time. But this time, the last time, he says, Peter, do you philios me? Do you love me like a brother? And Peter says in tears, he says, yes, Lord. Yes, I philios you. And one last time, Jesus says, feed my sheep. See, it's a beautiful story about forgiveness and redemption. Is there anyone here whose love is always what it should be? Is there anyone here who has not let others down when they really needed them? Is there anyone here whose faith never wavers? Is there anyone here who has not, at different times in their lives, simply decided to do things that they shouldn't do? Is there anyone here who has never denied Jesus? How important for us to see that Jesus does not demand God's perfect agape love from Peter. Jesus knows exactly how human Peter is. So he accepts what Peter can give him, which is his best effort as a human, philios, love. And in the process, Jesus sets Peter free from the guilt of his terrible denial. Jesus shows Peter that he doesn't have to be perfect to be loved and to be used by God. Forgiveness is an innovative gesture, one that offers us hope that we do not have to be defined by the sins of our past. So Jesus forgives Peter not only to free him from his cowardly denials and make him feel better about himself, but so that Peter will be able to now go and do something. And this is where that sermon gets legs. You know, every sermon should have something that calls you to do something bigger and better for yourself. Garrison Keillor, one of my very favorite radio people, writes about Larry Sorensen, who was a member of this fictitious town, Lake Wobegon. According to Keillor, Larry was saved no less than 12 times at the Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church, an all-time record for a church that never gave an altar call. And according to Keillor, between 1953 and 1961, Larry Sorensen came forward no fewer than 12 times, weeping buckets of tears and falling into a crumpled heap at the communion rail, much to the shock of the minister who had just delivered a very dry sermon on stewardship. But now he needed to put his arm around this person, pray with him, and be certain that he had a way to get home. Keillor writes, even we fundamentalists got tired of Larry after a while. And then he adds with great wisdom, he said, God didn't mean for you to feel guilty all your life. There comes a time when you should dry your tears and join the building committee and grapple with the problems of the church furnace and the church roof. But Larry just kept repenting and repenting and repenting. Another way to say it is that Jesus forgives us for the purpose of setting us free to do something spiritually creative with our lives, to connect. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. Do you love me? Feed my lambs. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. Where is Jesus at this moment in your life? Not in yesterday's experience, but in today's reality. Not in yesterday's failures, but today's forgiveness and new purpose. And at the end of the story, Jesus simply issues the invitation, follow me. Let's go. It seems to me that when we discover Jesus in the present realities of our lives, and when we experience the wonder of his redeeming love, what he most wants to teach us is not how to preach or to be theologians or to get religion. Rather, I think Jesus wants us to learn to cook breakfast for others and to step onto the shores of other people's lives and present them and be present with them and shower them with forgiveness and feed them with the food of faith. And there are people, friends, there are people you know who are hungry for God to touch their lives. And there are people you know who yearn for a taste of a love that can accept them as they are, forgive them for what they are not, and lead them into a higher purpose. So I ask you once again, where is Jesus in this moment of your life? While Jesus is present in this moment, Jesus is present in forgiveness. Jesus is present wherever his disciples are cooking breakfast along the shores of people's lives. So wait just a minute. You smell that? It smells like the breakfast of champions. Let us celebrate communion together.